Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Well, TrillCon is wrapping up, and I'd like to thank everybody for coming, but before we go, there's just one more thing. Trill Ballins International LLC has purchased the Lights Camera podcast and the Lights Camera Movies media platform. And we'll be integrating the Trill Ballins premium subscriber content cards into the content delivery system of this podcast. And this first podcast owned by Trill Ballins International LLC will only be available to those with these content cards. Thank you.
To infinity and beyond.
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess. But he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
No!
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights Camera Podcast, Episode 4. We're out of the prequel stage, so now we're all just good episodes from here on out. Jeff Lowe, LCP Kenjack, Trill Ballins.
What's up?
Yep. We got a review this week.
Hell
and,
yeah.
And talking some movie themes. Thanks for listening to Real Dump and all of our other podcasts. Real Dump being our weekly movie news podcast. This episode is released on Thursday morning, so we'll hit you up with another Real Dump on Sunday. Follow us on Twitter at Lights Camera Pod and check out our website with our movie ratings database, reviews, and more. LightsCameraMovies.com.
This week's Real Dump was good. I listened to the episode because I'm vain and I like to hear my voice.
It was funny. We got a lot of replies on the Batman thing.
Yeah, we had like 8 topics, and the most entertaining sections are when we go off on tangents. So and expect more of that. No, you can't talk.
I would like to say that I'm very happy so many people came out in support of me and my correct ranking of Batman.
I think the big thing is we didn't really have a set list of like guidelines. Like, we didn't really think West should be in it, but then we kind of thought he should. Then we added Conroy for the Twitter call out. Bottom line, that's exactly what we want to do with this podcast. We're going to have more of those things where we have you guys interact, reply. We're about to post another kind of vote call out here on our Twitter and see you guys live reply during the show. So again, follow us on Twitter at Lights Camera Pod. Check out the website, all that and more. Subscribe, give us 5 stars. Let's get right into some news. Avatar production underway. Finally, James Cameron says Avatar 5, the fifth one, is still on pace for 2025.
I'll be dead by then.
I don't have high hopes for me living then either.
By the time Avatar 5 comes out, it'll have been, what, like 17, 18 years since the original? Who gives a shit anymore? That's my question. We posed that question on our Twitter feed. I think it was a resounding no if people actually cared about it. Yeah, it was 75% said no, Avatar, about if they cared about the Avatar sequels.
Did we clarify in the poll that it's like, no, we don't like Avatar? Is it no, fuck Avatar? Because there's a lot of online websites that show a lot of fucking of Avatars. And that might have been the vote.
That's a good point.
Like with the hair tying up with each other?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the symbiosis.
So I feel like James Cameron, I love the guy. When some men get older, they get obsessed with like classic cars or like train sets. And James Cameron is just obsessed with these stupid blue aliens.
It's almost like a bad, like one of those people who always says they're about to go on a diet, but never does. That's like James Cameron with Avatar. It's always like, yeah, production's going to be underway. I mean, the first one came out 10 years ago. 10 years.
Jesus Christ. I didn't even think about that.
I didn't even have a Twitter account then. I couldn't roast Avatar online. So I'm looking forward to the second one. I think it'll be good, man. I mean, Avatar was entertaining.
I wasn't super obsessed with the first one like a lot of people were either. I think like maybe one of the standout performances in it was his name, Stephen Lane, the bad general who got shot with like giant arrows, who was also apparently back in the new ones, right?
Yeah, he died, but he's going to be back.
Guess what, folks? He's back.
Yeah. Are you doing another fucking Kingsman 2?
He's going to be born with the hair and he's just going to attach to other avatars and fuck them. And the dragons too. Because people forget that's a major plot point, is the same thing they use to bond to each other, they use to bond to the dragons, which is kind of weird. I don't feel like we talked about that enough.
Yeah, it's like your dick is like car keys or something.
I know, like now with like all the wireless push button starts, it's basically the same thing. Like it's always in the car with me. So how do I know it's not starting the car?
So Avatar 2 will come out in 2020, 3, 2021, 4, 2024, 5, 2025. So speaking of a movie series that has many sequels, Die Hard 6 is still in production, apparently. It's going to be a prequel-sequel hybrid, and they're casting the young John McClane. We are asking right now on our Twitter, live during the show, and we'll read the replies at the end of the show, assuming people do reply. Who would you cast, or who should play the young John McClane in the next Die Hard movie? Guys.
Haley Joel Osment.
Haley Joel Osment might look older than Bruce Willis looks right now.
No, I don't think Haley Joel Osment is my real pick, but I'm not sure I have a real pick for this, because who's going to play young John McClane's not something.
I guess maybe we don't have to do picks, but let's do some predictions at what people will say. My prediction is people will make a lot of jokes. I sent some Ansel Elgorts because I think people now know that Ken Jack hates Ansel Elgort. But I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt will be one, because remember he played a young Bruce Willis in Looper. So I think that's the one I bet we see the most.
It's Justin Long from Die Hard 4. Was it Die Hard 4? Like live, die, and free hard?
Live free.
Is that the one in Russia?
I don't remember, man.
Live free or die hard, yeah. And Timothy Olyphant was the bad guy. I have three guesses for this, and it's not necessarily who I think people will pick, but ones I think I might actually enjoy as McClane. Scott Eastwood, number one. I would love Scott Eastwood.
Yeah, as McClane. I can see that.
Big time. Because it doesn't require too much grace or anything. You just kind of need to be like a really gruff asshole, which I'm sure he can do. Our favorite guy from Kingsman, Taron Egerton.
I don't want to get too much into Kingsman, because tease for next week. We're going to review Kingsman, The Golden Circle next week. Those could be some interesting options.
What would the plot for a young John McClane story be like? Because isn't the conceit of the first Die Hard is that he's like just kind of a regular guy? Like, what if it's just him doing paperwork at a police station for 2 hours?
John McClane like slowly distancing himself from his wife that he gets divorced from.
McClane, I got 3 days until retirement. You got to get these paperwork pieces through.
Like he just has really bad experiences at Christmas parties at his regular desk job, or like as an early police officer, and it just leads to the big moment.
It's like him as a 19-year-old, and he just looks at the camera and he's like, I'm too old for this.
Lastly, Star Wars sponsorship deals. They have had a lot of sponsors for the first two movies in this whole new Star Wars world, Force Awakens and Rogue One. They inked some deals for Last Jedi. General Mills, so you're going to see it over all those cereal boxes. Nissan again. Nissan had a good time with Rogue One because they had the Nissan Rogue. Verizon and then Vizio. I will say, before we make any comment on this, which we're setting something up here. Can't tell. someone argued with me that Star Wars The Last Jedi did need more trailers, because I don't think they do, because they need more awareness. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, because in about 2 weeks or so, everything you see in every store will have Star Wars all over it. I've already seen Star Wars grapes, like just a bag of grapes with Rey, BB-8, and Finn on it, or Kylo Ren. You're not going to be able to go anywhere from mid-October through January without seeing every product have Star Wars on it.
The Force Awakens was kind of like that too. I think there was more of a lead up because there was a lot more anticipation just with it being the first Star Wars film in almost a decade. You're going to get to mid-October, start of October, and everything in Walgreens is going to have BB-8 on it. You're going to walk down like the feminine care section and just the evil BB-8 are just going to be over the products. I mean, it's going to happen, and you're going to get to the actual movie itself and you're going to feel like it's been out for 2 months, because everywhere you see products, Star Wars is going to be tied into it, which, by the way, I love Star Wars, so I don't mind it, but
yeah, the
Blitz is coming. It's coming, folks.
All right. On the other side of this commercial break, we have a review of the movie It. So if you're listening to this, It, yep. Not the IT department.
Oh, did I see the wrong one?
I think you did.
Wow, it sounds like a skit.
We'll be right back.
Okay, Poe, we have to sneak through this battle station without getting detected, okay? Okay, Finn, you got it. You gotta sneak across first and then cover me when I go. Okay, Poe, it's your turn. Sneak over. Finn, you didn't hear? We're sponsored by Christian Louboutin now. I got these fashionable stilettos as part of our branding deal.
Finn, are you kidding me? We're gonna get caught.
Oh yeah? Well, I'd literally rather be caught dead in these than in your crappy Converses, Finn.
Stop that ship! Blast
them! Alright, back on Lights, Camera, Podcast, Episode 4. We're gonna review the movie It, and we're actually going to do a spoiler and non-spoiler section here, because some people haven't seen the movie, and it's really the first full review we're going to do of a movie that we don't hate, because the summer movie thing was kind of quick, and this is going to be a little longer. So this is not like the Emoji Movie or Transformers. We're not just going to blow through everything. Quickly, score for the movie. What did you give it? I gave it an 85.
I gave it a 75. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a good movie. I didn't love it as much as some people were loving it. I didn't think it was scary enough, and maybe that's on me. Maybe that wasn't the intent. I did think they did a great job of showcasing a lot of cool concepts. Its forms were really neat. I thought Bill Skarsgård did a great job as It, and I thought the kid actors were some of the best kid actors I'd seen. 75. It was solid.
I gave it a 72. I think my biggest problem with the movie maybe is that I didn't see the first one, and I just don't have a deep-seated hatred, fear of clowns and that movie in general. I agree. I think the kids were really good in it. Skarsgård was good in it. It's just like execution-wise, I just didn't really get into it. And I also was never scared by it really at any point. The jump scares and everything were just kind of corny, and I was never gripping my seat or anything, being like, oh shit, it's a fucking clown, I'm so scared. And I also felt like they ripped off a lot of the vibe of Stranger Things, which obviously Stranger Things is after. But not beyond stealing Finn Wolfhard from their cast in his porno-ass name, which is an awesome name, Finn Wolfhard. I was thinking of before earlier of trying to give him other alternate names like Big McLarge Huge, Fist Rockbone, Reef Blast Body, Slab Squat Thrust,
Shooter Long Shot.
Stump Beef Knob, Trunk Slam Chest. But beyond stealing him, also, did you notice it? And this is, I'll get into this in the spoiler section. The actual Pennywise the Clown kind of ripped some of the vibe from the Demogorgon from Stranger Themes, especially at one specific scene.
We'll get into that, because it does. But I think we can talk in non spoilers about, well, let's get into this part first. We'll get to the Stranger Things tie in. Did it scare you? I think that's the big question, because whether you're scared or not, I think the clown is creepy as shit. I think that's for sure. But I don't know if I was legitimately scared. I don't count a jump scare as being scared. I think it can jolt me. There's a couple things when I watched that did jolt me, but I wouldn't call it scary because you kind of see what's going to happen.
We got to wait until the spoiler section to talk about what creeped me out the most. I'm not a guy who's really afraid of clowns. I mean, they're creepy for sure. I know a lot of people think they scare them the most. Part of me, like, I wonder, in terms of being a horror movie, was it supposed to scare me like a traditional horror movie, or was it just supposed to be more of a supernatural sci-fi type movie with horror elements? Does that make sense? So my expectation,
yeah, no, it makes complete
sense. So like, I didn't know, like, am I supposed to be scared? Because I didn't feel all that scared. On the other hand, there were parts of it that were certainly creepy.
Yeah, I never felt like that overwhelming urge of like just suspense and like anxiety or anything like that. I just never got that feeling. And if that was what they were trying to do, or jump scares what they were trying to do, either way, I just never felt like at any point really, I don't know, tense.
Yeah, I agree with that, Ken Jack. I think part of it for me too is having the protagonists as kids kind of took some of the scare out of it for me, because they're, you know, vessels that you know are going to prevail in the end. We already know they're going to prevail, but
yeah,
if they're an adult and they're like the deep-seated fears of adults, and like maybe more relevant to like what we're going to discuss in a few minutes in the podcast with their own fears, then maybe I could get more into it. But for the most part, it kind of just seemed like I didn't connect to them in like their horror as well as I would have if it was like a balding guy who sits in a cubicle all day.
Yeah, I think also, yeah, I agree that if you're not really scared of clowns, you might not be as scared, because there's a lot of clown references in this, and I'm not really scared of clowns. I mean, I've scrolled through Trill Ballin's Twitter a ton, never scared of that.
Ooh.
Never scared of this movie either.
Hot take.
What a telegraph dig that was.
Yeah, I'm going to pretend, I'm just going to go on my list of pre-written jokes.
I can just see Ken Jack in the theater, like he sees the trailer for the new Tom Cruise movie, and he's just thinking about the next podcast, and he just, oh shit, and he writes down this little Trill Ballin's joke.
Okay, hot take here for you guys. I feel like people pretend to be afraid of clowns because it's like funny. I don't understand how people could be that afraid of clowns. I mean, they are creepy.
I get it. I liken it to the same thing where people pretend they like Shark Week.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's that fad where people are like, oh, love Shark Week. You've never watched Shark Week.
Shark Week's boring as shit.
It really is.
If you want to see a shark, just Google image search it.
I don't like clowns. And actually thinking about like a clown kind of gives me shivers. It does terrify me. But I completely get what you're saying. I think people pick it because it's like the cool thing to hate, because people like saying this one line. They like saying clowns. I think people like, that's a fun thing to say.
Yeah. Calling someone a clown is a grievous insult. So I get it. Like, you know, if someone called me a clown, I'm like super offended, but I don't take it to mean like I'm a creepy guy, which I may be, but I take it to mean like this guy's goofy.
That reminds me of that, that really funny tweet, the "Who is this clown?" one.
Yeah. It implies that A, this guy is a clown, and two, he's not even one of the better known clowns. The scary part about clowns is not necessarily the clown itself, but like for people who are clowns in real life, like what led them to that point in their life where they are a clown.
So let's get back into one thing that we mentioned just a minute or two ago, the Stranger Things element, because I actually liked, and I don't think I'm alone here, because I've listened to other reviewers, some podcasts I listened to who reviewed this movie, and they kind of have the same thoughts on it. I enjoyed the kids stuff more than I enjoyed some of the clown stuff. I thought the actual kid part, like the Stranger Things part of the movie, was better than anything with the clown, because I didn't like the jump scares. I didn't like those clown scenes. I thought Skarsgård was great as Pennywise, but I didn't love the clown scenes. I thought they were okay, but they weren't great. I think any terrifying element of a movie like Get Out, which was so creative and so different, and that's why I have it so much higher than It. I think any scene from that was outstanding. Where in It, it was like, okay, the Stranger Things element, which again, as you said, Ken Jack, is kind of funny, because Stranger Things takes from the It original TV series, and this movie kind of takes from Stranger Things. But I liked all that better, because the kid actors were fantastic.
Ordinarily, I would agree with you. The challenge with good horror movies is, part of the horror is like this off-screen Lovecraftian lurking presence. So there's this balance between showing the horror character or the entity too much, which is like overkill, and then not showing it at all, which I want to see. However, like this one, it was just such an interesting presence that I wanted to see more. So like I did like the kids. I wanted to see more of the clown, which I thought I'd never say, but I wanted to see more of the clown. It's just, I understand why I didn't, because like the clown would have been on the screen more. It would have killed a lot of the element of lurking terror in the background.
Yeah, but I think that's almost what I'm saying, is I think the parts of him lurking is what I like.
Oh.
But my thing is that the few times we do get the clown or the other forms it takes,
you're going to get the clown, kid.
A few are great, but some of them just kind of go out in a whimper that I'm not.
Yeah.
And I think if this movie had come out like 3 or 4 years ago, I would have liked it more. But there have been better horror movies. Like, I love Don't Breathe. I loved Get Out. They use silence. They use different sounds and different music. I completely take this cue from one of my favorite movie reviewers out there. That's Red Letter Media. They mentioned it, is that every time there was a scare with Pennywise, they made this really loud sound like music, and it was all telegraphed, where I think silence and different like noises and cues causes a lot more tension. That's the part where it, to me, went from being great to just a good movie.
I completely agree with that. My like all-time, I think, movie that scared me the absolute most is still Blair Witch Project, and I think that's because they had such an insanely good use of sound and non-sound. Like, sometimes, like, silence is as scary as, like, having some fucking soundtrack or Pennywise sounding like a troll. Like, I think that's just way better.
Yeah, I think I'm coming around to realize that I agree with you guys, and I'm just saying the same thing but differently. That's our new show thing, is where we debate each other but have the same opinions.
Except for Batman.
Oh, man, damn it. I was about to say.
I just don't know if they could have executed this any better with the source material and what they were given.
And to be mainstream.
Right.
Which they wanted.
I think the amount of hype that this got is maybe somewhat a product of how slow this summer has been with good movies. So I came into the movie thinking it was going to be really good because it got hyped up and everyone's like, oh, you got to see it. It's like doing so well in the box office. Like, go see it. And it was just kind of average. And I think it's maybe like a product of it being relative to how shitty the other movies have been this summer.
So we, for the most part, enjoyed it.
Boom.
I gave it an 85, Ken Jack 72, Trill a 75. On the other side of this commercial break, we're going to get into some spoilers, talk about some of the other forms it takes, the ending, and what's next for this series. We'll be right back to Lights, Camera, Podcast.
Are you tired of tossing and turning on your traditional mattress? Are you ready for the best night of sleep you'll ever get? Are you ready for Star Wars The Last Jedi? The Last Jedi hits theaters this December, and we here at Lisa Mattress want to celebrate its release by introducing our new spokesperson, Lisa Jar Jar Binks.
You know what, guys? I can't do this anymore. I quit.
We're back here on Lights, Camera, Podcast. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, LCP Kenjack. We're into It spoilers. So if you have not seen the movie It, skip. You can look in the iTunes or SoundCloud or Google Play, wherever you listen. Look in the description. You can see where to skip to for our next segment, which won't be spoiler heavy. Okay, so we kind of all implied about the other forms It takes, besides Pennywise the Clown. Did any of those freak you out? Because there was one of them two of them in particular, which I guess really were the only other two, really kind of spooked me a fair amount. There was one that was kind of disgusting, and I leaned back a little bit when I saw it.
Was it the blood explosion?
It was the flute lady, the painting. I think it's called like Judith or something, where it has his mouth on Stan and like lifts it up and all the teeth and blood like spout from his face. He just
bit
him. That got me a little bit, because I didn't expect that, and I just, that jolted me a little bit. I think the non-Pennywise forms, like the leper, was disgusting.
Oh, yeah. That was great character design, or great creature design, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I mean, I love seeing that stuff. I thought that was, like, really well done. The scene in the bathroom where the blood explodes out of the sink was probably my favorite one, just because I didn't expect for it to explode. I expected it, like, to pull her down, like, closer to the sink. So in terms of jump scares, like, that was kind of one where maybe you didn't see the creature itself, but its presence gushed all over the screen in the bathroom.
That leper scene was really fucking gross, where they were in front of the house when it like chased him into the back and the balloons like popped and and Pennywise disappeared. That scene was good. I also think the blood scene was pretty scary as well. Beverly, I think, was maybe the best character in the show or in the movie.
Oh yeah, she was definitely the standout of that entire cast. I mean, I don't know if you want to include Bill Skarsgård, because I think he's already somewhat established, but Sophia Lillis was the standout for me, because I had no idea who she was before even seeing this movie, and her presence was great. Great actress, great performance in this role, and the role she was given, when there was a lot of heavy elements like relating to her father, probably were like the creepiest and scariest scenes in the film for me. And you know, relating that to Pennywise, and at the end where he kind of takes the form of her father before she just demolishes him. So she did a great job with that, and especially in that bathroom scene where she's just coated in blood and her father comes in, and the line where you know, he makes a comment about her hair was just so gross and creepy that yeah, I mean, great job with what she did in the film.
She had two of the more terrifying Pennywise moments too. The one where she turns around and he grabs her by the neck, and the other time where he's dancing.
Yes. Yeah, the dancing kind of like, scene was scary.
And she tries to run and he jumps, grabs her and lifts her up by the neck. All the kid actors nailed it, because if the kid actors stunk, they would have been in some real trouble. Did we like how Pennywise was, I don't want to say defeated, because he technically wasn't defeated because he went back down his well. I don't like the original miniseries. I think most people don't realize that it stinks who didn't see it. It's kind of like the Shark Tank and being scared of the Shark Tank. The Shark Tank.
Sharknado.
With Barbara Corcoran and Kevin O'Leary. The Shark Week thing, or the being afraid of clowns. I think a lot of people just say, oh, it was so great, who haven't really seen the original miniseries. Because the second half of it with the adults is, by all accounts, horrible. Even Tim Curry, who was great as Pennywise, has said that it stinks. And the director of it hated it. But that one, the kids defeat him by using like their imagination in a sense. They're like, they throw a rock at Pennywise and like, this is battery acid. And there's like a different way to kill him. I like that element of how they defeated it more than this one, because I feel like this one, they just kind of like bashed the shit out of him.
It was rushed at the end. I mean, I felt like they would come up with like a clever way, but it really was like an SNES, like platform game, like Final Bashing Fight. Game. Final Fight 2, and they're all just using their specials at the end. Yeah, but, you know, they did set it up for the sequel, and I don't know how they could have. It's not like any of them have, like, a special, like, power they could have used to really kill them off. I did like the air gun or whatever it was.
The cattle prod thing?
Was it the bolt gun? Was it, like, the same thing that...
Yeah, from No Country for Old Men.
No, yeah.
Did you notice, too, in the this is another scene with Beverly, he opens up his face, and it's, like, the tunnel of teeth, just like the Demogorgon from Stranger Things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, because they don't really show that in the original It. The original It, it's more just like his kind of fang teeth. Because those are the deadlights, which is really what the main crux of everything is for It, and how It, you know, kills and takes over people. Actually, well, all he's doing there is he's just kind of like hypnotizing her. He puts her in a trance and she floats in the air. That was pretty disgusting too, when his face just like rips open.
When his face opened up, it kind of reminded me of the creature design from Pan's Labyrinth. There's some pretty creepy things in there with the creature with the eyes on its hands. So I thought that was pretty good. I mean, that whole scene towards the end where she's just like floating in the air is just very spooky, and I think provides some of the best visuals of the entire movie, just because it's so surreal.
I just didn't like the movie too much. My final rating is shit for It. Don't watch it.
Wait, no, I disagree. I thought it was good.
Wait,
I thought we all just thought it was good. Are you just doing that to be clever, Ken Jack? Are you trying to make a joke?
I'm not doing another Alien, I'm Loving It.
So the big thing with the end of the movie, which we're putting it in spoilers because technically it's a spoiler, but obviously it just ends. They defeat It. He goes back down the well, and they make some sort of like blood oath that they're going to return.
And let me add, the kid who's a hypochondriac his entire life has no problem slicing open his hand and swapping blood with someone else. You just don't change that quickly, man. It's rooted. It's rooted in your brain. It doesn't happen like that. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it just like that was one thing.
That's a good point. So the next movie, which is coming out in 2019, it should be set around 2017. Because how this works is they changed it a little bit. In the movie, they say every 27 years, it returns. And they did that because in the original, it was 30. But if you go back 27 years, that's when the TV series came out, which is kind of a cool nod to that. So this movie's set in 1980. And actually, Ken Jack, you brought it up in our famous little group chat we have about why it wasn't set in present day. And that's because the sequel will be set in present day. So it'll be when they're adults and they'll have to defeat it.
Hey, can I ask you a question real quick? What's 1980 plus 27?
Oh, it's 2007.
It's 2007, right? Yeah. So it takes place in 1989.
I knew it took place in 1989. Didn't I say that in our group chat?
Did we say 1980 a bunch? Well, no. I mean, you were saying 80s. So I'm the one who's wrong here. I'm going to take the blow on that.
No, I was just trying to be such a dick about...
Like, you did make me seem like a huge idiot.
I think that's what people like. They like to see us beat each other down. And by like, you know, if we can just keep attacking each other and kill our own chemistry here, we'll be okay.
So basically, if they were to set the kids in present day, it would be like Blade Runner, basically, for the next sequel, because it'd be in 2040. Whatever it is, like 40 something, like maybe like 2045, 44. So that's why it's set then. But yeah, the next one will be in the 2010s. I don't know. So it should be 2016 then if it's set in 1989. And they've already talked about some of the people who could play the kids as adults. I think the only one that has been actually connected is Jessica Chastain to play Beverly. Do you have anyone who would play any of the other kids? Any thoughts?
Ansel Elgort.
Fuck you. That's what, in our group chat, that's what we said, right? Is that in the future, it's definitely going to be Ansel Elgort, Miles Teller, and somebody else, non-consequential. Like, what's that dude's name? McPhee, something McPhee.
Catherine McPhee?
No. No.
So I'm gonna contradict myself just to be fair, because like I try to play a character on here where I'm just like a huge butthole to Jeff, because he is the most knowledgeable. So I said earlier, maybe I'd connect better if they were adults. But now that I'm thinking about the general concept of having a sequel with adults, I don't know if I really care that much.
Well, the original, people enjoyed the kid part.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little corny and there were some things that looked stupid. But for the most part, they liked it. The adult half, as I mentioned earlier, is widely panned. And it was horrible. The lines were terrible. The special effects were bad. There was a huge spider that looked awful, which I think was from the book. I didn't read the book, so I don't totally know. But the adult part was the disaster. So First off, I'm glad they just did the kids for one movie. That was so smart. Because that's one of the rare times where I think jamming one whole book into a movie would have been a bad idea. So I think overall, I don't know. Ken Jack, I'm not quite sure now. I don't know if you liked it or not.
Well, 70, what did I give it? 72. I don't recommend watching it unless you're like really bored. And really like horror.
I don't agree with that. I think it was a good watch.
I think it was a good watch too, Jeff. I think Ken Jack's starting to have a rep for bad opinions on this podcast, honestly. Ooh. I know some people on the internet are saying this.
Many people are saying the opposite on the internet.
So I don't know how they could have made a better movie with the source material that they were given. So I know I gave it a 75.
I agree with Trill. Like, I think it's they did the best with the material they had, but it's still shit. So like, just don't make it at all.
Oh God.
Oh dang. It was definitely worth seeing. I don't know if I'm excited for the sequel. I don't care that much.
I said in the non-spoiler section that we mostly liked it. Apparently we didn't. Trill and I liked it.
I did some introspection.
Ken Jack said shit, but he still gave it a 72, so that's a passing grade. I gave it an 85. Trill gave it a 75. This has been our review of It. Please tweet us. Let us know what you think. We're going to have our written review up on lightscameramovies.com, and we'll tweet it out as well. On the other side of this commercial break, we're going to talk about the top three things that It would transform into if it were chasing us. So the some fears that it would transform into if it were chasing us around Derry, Maine, or wherever we live now. We'll be right back. The Lights, Camera, Podcast.
Hell yeah. The Last Jedi. Can't wait to get into the theater.
Dude, I've been waiting so long. Oh, boy.
What's wrong?
I'm feeling so constipated. I have to go to the bathroom. What if I miss the beginning of the movie?
It's a crap. Admiral Ackbar here with X-Lax, the laxative pill that will help your garbage chutes flow properly. Just take this little pill, and you'll be Kessel running to the bathroom in no time. Don't miss out on anything, especially your favorite movie.
Thanks, Admiral Akbar. I won't ever leave the house without my X-Lax.
It's a crap!
All right, welcome back to Lights, Camera, Podcast. We're talking fears now. What it would show up as if it were chasing us in our hometown. So it can obviously take many different forms. Pennywise the Clown being the most popular. In the original, it took the form of like Wolfman. And I think maybe the creature from the Blue or Black Lagoon. I always mess that up. But for the most part, it takes many different forms. It did in the new one. We're out of spoiler section, so I don't want to say what other forms it takes. But guys, what would it transform into if it were chasing you, trying to kill you and scare you and not pull you down the drain? Like, I'm not, I think it's been memed, Pennywise luring Georgie into the drain. It's been memed as like, what would get you down the drain? We're not talking about what would get you down the drain. We're talking about what would appear in the damn drain. So,
and all the memes are like, hey, Georgie, want to come down here? I've got pizza down here. And people on Instagram are like, oh yeah, pizza. Like, pizza, man. I like pizza. I'm unique. Okay, I'll go first. So my fears are more around the blood scene, which I really liked, where I don't think it had a real physical form here. It was more just a scene. The first one is dying in a cubicle. So all it would have to do is come to a cubicle that I'm sitting in with a gun and threaten to kill me. So it wouldn't take a lot there, because one of my fears is that I'm going to die using Microsoft Excel in a cubicle. The second form is like, I open up a door and I look down and my dong is just hanging out my pants after I peed. So it's walking around with my dong out of my pants, just in public. And then the third form is another scene where I open up a door and I have diarrhea, but I'm on an airplane. So I have to have like IBS type diarrhea and I'm on an airplane. Those are my three biggest fears.
I like that. I like that last one a lot.
Oh my God. Mine are kind of along that same route. My first one, grape soda. I think grape soda is one of the grossest things in the world, and it's an instant gag for me. The smell of any grape drink, period, will basically make me vomit. Number two, getting a craving for Chick-fil-A on Sunday. So it would show up as like Chick-fil-A, but you can't obtain it because it's Sunday. And finally, the thing that terrifies me most, and it's because I have horrible secondhand embarrassment, is whenever people clap on an airplane. It would show up as a group of like tourists with fanny packs and really lame hats, like they say Destin, Florida, and they're all clapping at the end of a flight. That's the main terrifying it form for me.
The only good time to clap on a flight is when it was been like a really rough flight and you think you're going to die halfway through, and then the pilot lands the plane. Like, I'm down with that clapping because it's basically a bunch of people congratulating the pilot on not fucking up.
Yeah, I'm talking like smooth Nashville to Orlando flight. Takes about an hour and a half, 2 hours.
So it's like the Southwest flight attendant gets on and reads the rules to like Fancy by Iggy Azalea, and someone's filming it and it goes viral and everyone just claps afterward. It's all on Facebook. It's like, you won't believe what this Southwest flight attendant did. One of my cut fears might be boarding on Southwest after you forget to check in the day before. Like, if you get like C-47. You're just terrified that you're going to have a middle seat near the back, smelling that bathroom stuff.
That almost makes me want to change mine. Like, that is such a good one. When you're like A through mid B, you know you're really going to get a pick of your seat. But then anything really after middle B, you have that fear the whole from the time you screwed up check-in till you get there. You're like, oh, shit, I'm going to be in the middle.
And if you're flying with a loved one or someone you want to sit next to and you both forget to check in and you don't get to sit next to each other.
Yeah.
And then maybe you have to ask somebody if you can trade seats, but you can't really do that because somebody already has the premium aisle or the premium window seat. So that's not an even trade. You got to throw in like a grape soda or some shit.
So, ooh, gross. So basically, Trill and I, it would just show up as the airline industry. That's basically what it boils down to.
I got three. One of them is very niche to, personal life. My first one is having any of my favorite franchises have a reboot or a new casting starring Ansel Elgort or Miles Teller.
Oh, no.
So, a.k.a. having Ansel Elgort play Han Solo in the spinoff. That would have been one of my biggest fears. So that's number one. Number two is my first grade teacher, Miss Nielsen. I'll give you a little insight to first grade Ken Jack. This teacher once called my mom because I sharpened my pencils too much and made me sit in a corner for it. I was a decently good reader, and she segregated me from my whole class and made me read alone because I read faster than everyone else. And then
that's messed up.
Nice brag.
The number one offense. I asked her, could I get up to pee? And because I'd already gotten up to pee that day, she said no, and I pissed my pants in class because I had to pee so bad.
Dude, that's psychological trauma.
Yeah, and she looked like a witch too, and also dressed like a witch on Halloween, which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah, but you're so young, she probably was really like 31.
No, she was pretty old. And then my last one is having any of my sexts revealed to the internet at any point. And I'm going to make an ad hoc offer here for our listeners. If we get to 1,000 listeners or 1,000 followers on our main Twitter account by Friday, I'll reveal the very deep dive sext. But we have to hit 1,000 by Friday.
I think we're 200 away.
You know, actually, that Black Mirror episode where the kid is like videotaped like on his webcam.
Yeah.
Like, that's always a fear of mine. Like I know most people block theirs, but I don't. So, and you always get like it's like a bad angle too. It's like you get your double chin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's the most unflattering
it's like
angle.
Jabba the Hutt churning butter.
It'd be me laying on my side of my bed like.
But the rest of that episode, that's one of the most effed up things I think I'd seen.
So those are the things that it would turn into if it were chasing us around our hometown trying to eat and kill us and bite off our arms. We're going to tweet out our picks, and then we're going to tweet out asking for you guys to send in your picks. And we'll probably tweet out the best like 9 or something, however many can fit on the graphic. So send yours in and be obscure, you know? Don't just pick, you know, spiders or clowns or stuff like that. So just, you know, hit us up with your funniest and best options.
It's like those Instagram memes that are so popular now where it's like basically like how Bay feels when she has anxiety.
It's like, yeah, stuff like that.
My fear is having something every other human has.
If we did that, like the Instagram community, the number one fear would be like losing friends from Netflix.
When you break up with Bay and Bay changes the Netflix password and then the Papa John's passwords change too, and you can't get pizza and Netflix and chill and eat pizza and eat tacos on Tuesday.
So let us know what your thoughts are, not just on it, but what your version of it would be. What would be chasing you? We're going to go to a quick commercial, and then we're going to kind of change things around a bit. We're going to talk about our favorite / best movie songs. And I say songs and themes because some of them are just thongs. I knew I was going to say it.
Thong, 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 thongs.
Because some of them are songs and thongs. some of them are John Williams score type themes. So on the other side of the commercial break, we'll talk about movie music.
Are you tired of brushing your teeth with your traditional toothbrush? Do you wish there was a better way to clean your teeth like you get at the dentist? Well, Sonicare's got the solution, and this December when The Last Jedi hits theaters, we'll have a special promotion for you. Here to speak on this is our new spokesperson. Hi.
Lisa Jar Jar Binks! Lisa Jar
Jar Binks! That doesn't make any sense.
Lisa Jar Jar Binks!
All right, we're back here on Lights, Camera, Podcast. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, LCP Ken Jack. We're talking best / favorite movie songs. And again, I say best / favorite because, look, I personally, and I'm sure you guys agree, I could have put 100 songs. You know, so I'm not saying these are the definitive best, but to me and to you guys, these are our best and our favorites. So, Trill, start us off. What are your 5 picks?
Number one, all time, the GOAT for me is Promontory from featured in The Last of the Mohicans.
Don't you have that saved in about 20 different forms on your computer?
I have a lot of versions of this song. There are some. So the one featured in the soundtrack is just this awesome booming song that just builds up to this awesome crescendo. And the way it's used in the movie is really cool too. So I do associate the song with the scene, but there are a lot of versions. There's always like the bluegrass version you can find on Apple Music of like every song ever made. Oh yeah, I listened to that one too. This was featured in a Nike ad with LaDainian Tomlinson and Troy Polamalu, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And that was one of Nike's best ads from a period. Like, they had a lot of really good ads in the mid-2000s. They had one with Michael Vick, who was essentially in a video game. That was pretty neat. I don't know if Nike's making fire ads anymore. So if they want to do something really cool, just add this one back into the mix. Number two, Bruce Springsteen, Streets of Philadelphia from the motion picture Philadelphia.
Tell what I felt, I was unrecognizable.
I'm not a huge Springsteen guy. I like the guy. I think his music's pretty good, but this song is so awesome, and it really captures the tone of the movie very well.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm a big Bruce guy, so that's kind of a no-brainer pick.
Are you a baseball writer? are you the baseball crank?
I actually didn't think about this one, so lots of props to you, because when I was doing some research about making sure I wasn't going to sound like an idiot with some of my picks, this was on a lot of lists.
I assure you that this is straight from the heart. I did not consult, unlike my other podcasts, I did not consult a single list in the creation of this one. This one also is kind of cursed because it's such a fun and easy song to sing. But you cannot get up a karaoke and bang this one out. The whole bar will be walking out. I was boozing battered. I didn't know for myself. I had no reputation by myself on the streets of Philadelphia. Number three, The Breakfast Club, Don't You Forget About Me by, I don't really know the name of the band, but the song's a straight banger. So I know you guys are doing a lot of scores. I tend to enjoy those. I try to stay away from really obvious choices. When I think about The Breakfast Club, I always think about the scene at the end with the bully guy raising his fist in the air while this song plays. And it's like the perfect 80s song. It has that synth in it. The singer sounds like just straight, like somebody just juiced 80s all over the recording studio.
Yeah, and this is what I mean by movie songs too, because I guess you could say that's the theme of the movie, I guess. But that's the song I think of most when I think of Breakfast Club. And it is iconic. I mean, they reference it as one of the most iconic movie songs ever in Pitch Perfect, the first Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, you know, some songs are like inherently the song of the movie. Like, I Will Always, or My Heart Will Always Go On with Celine Dion. Like, that's the Titanic banger. Some songs just kind of become associated with the movie because they fit so well and they're a good song. I think that's one of those. Number four for me, Ecstasy of Gold from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So whenever I think about a Western, I think about this song. So I think the whole spaghetti Western thing, it just encapsulates that genre so well. And Metallica actually uses this song to open up their shows, which is pretty cool. And on the Metallica S&M live album, they did a sex joke there. On that live album, they do a really cool live version with the San Francisco Orchestra.
I'm a huge fan of that song. Big fan of that whistle.
That's one of the most iconic movie songs.
Well, it's perfect because it has that, like, it comes in soft, right? And it's, you're curious in it. Then it kind of builds and it just has a da, da. And then, like, the vocals and the, you know, the voices near the end is just really neat.
Isn't that also in a Nike commercial?
Probably. I actually just watched Nike commercials and then came up with this list. I lied to you guys. I did go off a list. It was, like, best Nike commercials of all time. I included this one because I wanted to include one of the James Bond ones. Skyfall by Adele.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10.
So there are a lot of good James Bond songs you could use here. There are also a lot of really bad James Bond songs.
There are.
And so I wanted to include a James Bond song. And maybe you guys have the actual James Bond motif on your list, which I think is an all-timer. But that motif is incorporated into these songs. The Chris Cornell James Bond song was another good one that I like Skyfall better than that one. And then Duran Duran did A View to a Kill, which I think is one of the better ones as well. Something about Skyfall and Adele's voice and basically it being the last decent James Bond movie. I know there's only been one release since. It fit the, in my opinion, one of the better James Bond movies really well.
You're right. It set the tone for that movie so well, which is what the point of a lot of those are supposed to do. Because like a lot of the older Bonds, they had a little different feel. Some of them had like, I don't think campy's the right word, but a different feel to them that set the tone. And that Bond was so deep and emotional. That song just, you're right, that song crushed it. And I will say, not to harp on our how this is going to work, because we really want you guys to reply, but you can kind of pick anything. We can accept the James Bond regular score theme, but also like the movie songs as well.
The bridge in this song is phenomenal as well. And Adele always comes out of the bridge with just a, you know, her range is amazing. I like how I pretend like I'm a music critic and I know like I know the terms.
Lights, camera, music.
Yeah, the bridge is really, and she hits her baritone, then the treble clef.
Well, you dropped that sick Catherine McPhee reference earlier from American Idol, so that's really going to music today.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Are we doing worst as well? We're going to save that.
We'll save worst. I'll jump into mine here. We'll start it out. I'm sorry if I'm about to cuck you, Ken Jack.
You're definitely going to cuck the show.
But the number one, I think I'm only going to do it on one of them. The number one for me, because I don't think of movie songs without this, is the opening score to Star Wars. I don't even need to really go in on it too much.
Thanks for playing that clip, because I forgot.
if you forgot what it was. I mean, that to me, to this day, every time I watch it, and I saw John Williams in person play this shit at Star Wars Celebration, and it was one of, I didn't know Goosebumps got that big on you, because I've never felt anything like that. When he popped out and played this, this is like childhood, this is everything to me. As I record this podcast, and my walls are lined with Star Wars toys, so I think it's an obvious pick here.
Hey, Jeff, can you take your headphones off real quick? I got to talk to Ken Jack.
Yeah, sure.
All right, thanks. Hey, Ken Jack, get a load of this fucking nerd. All right, wave at him so he puts his headphones back on. All right.
Hey, what's up?
All good things. All good things are said.
So we'll move on. I don't think we need to harp on that one much more. It's, again, another really iconic one. Next up, The Circle of Life from The Lion King. So The Circle of Life, another one where the second you hear that first couple sets of notes, you know exactly what it is. And I think whether it's like the Broadway one or the one from the movie, it's just another one that really kind of, it's laced with memories for me, because it just reminds me of like childhood and how obsessed I was and kind of still am with this movie, The Circle of Life. And then I mean, there's different versions of it. There's the Elton John version. It's another versatile song.
Yeah, that was my question. Do you like the original movie version, or do you like the Elton John version from the soundtrack?
I'll go original, because I don't want to talk about Elton John too much, because he's in Kingsman, and we're going to harp on that a lot next week. I know that really triggers Ken Jack.
I'm saving it.
he's so locked and loaded for Kingsman, it's not even funny.
He's gritting his teeth right now.
So Circle of Life, and that whole movie in general, is one of the best musical movies there is. I mean, in terms of like soundtracks, that movie crushes it from start to finish.
The movie Lion King feels like it's 15 minutes long because it's paced so well.
Yeah.
And I know it's a short movie because it's a Disney animated joint, but it's like, it just goes by really quickly in a good way.
Yeah, you're right. I never really thought about it that way, but that should be like the benchmark for pacing.
Next up, this is cheating completely. It's like a two-parter. The Back to the Future theme / The Power of Love by Huey Lewis in the News. Okay, so I got a huge thumbs down from Ken Jack there. The Power of Love is awesome. The Back to the Future. So Back to the Future is my favorite movie. It's not what I think the best movie of all time is. That's Empire Strikes Back. So the Back to the Future is my favorite movie. So this was kind of a no-brainer for me. But between that and Power of Love, Marty McFly riding on a skateboard in the back of a truck. Come on. Why is the hate flows in you so much on that one? I got the thumbs down. I got the Yankees fan thumbs down.
To me, I never really got into Back to the Future at all. And Huey Lewis, to me, in the cinematic world, and this, you're going to hate this, but is way more connected to American Psycho than I ever connected to Back to the Future.
I'm feeling hurt on that.
I like it. I think the score to Back to the Future is one of the more instantly recognizable scores. I think if you consider the era in which Back to the Future was made, I think the Huey Lewis song fits in really well there. I like it more than the ZZ Top song they used in the third one, or the second one, Double Back. Did you know they were actually in the movie, like, as Wild West guys?
Like, I didn't realize that.
They were playing a fiddle version of that song in the movie.
Look at the information. From music to movie facts, you're just dishing it out tonight.
Yeah, I like how I call you a nerd for liking music, and then I start talking about, like, ZZ Top trivia.
All right, number four. And this one, it's more because it's recognizable, and I always feel like I want to dance and skip down the street. It's the Austin Powers theme song.
Jeff, I gotta say, I fucking love that pick. That is an awesome pick. And now all I got is that stuck in my head now.
Yeah, exactly. That gets stuck in your head because it's like a whistle. It's a bit of a whistle, that song. So it's an easy one to get stuck in your head.
Also great opening sequences. I wouldn't have thought of it. So I think you're a very smart man for even associating it, because it didn't come to mind when I think of it. But I love it. I love the pick. I love what we're doing here on this podcast, folks.
Keep liking this podcast. So you like the pick, and I actually kind of went along with you for my last pick, which is also a James Bond song, and that's Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney and the Wings.
Yes.
Say, live and let die.
So this one, I think, is my favorite James Bond song. And just in general, I love this song. He played it at the Super Bowl, the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl, back in like 2004 or 5, whatever year it was played. And it was still badass. It was great then. Live and Let Die is a banger to this day for me. It fits so well in that era Bond. It would never work in a James Bond movie with like Daniel Craig at all. But it fit that movie perfectly. Another catchy song for me. Love Live and Let Die.
I got a hot take. I love this song, but the Guns N' Roses version is better.
Oh, wow. That is a hot take.
Ooh. I think the Paul McCartney and the Wings version is great. I just think the Guns N' Roses version is better.
Love the Wings. Love, take me down to the street.
When you were young and your heart was an open book.
If you guys ever go through my Twitter feed, it's a lot of Beatles hate, including John McCartney.
I know you hate the Beatles, but do you like this song?
I do like this song, yeah.
Did you say John McCartney?
I know. The second I said it, the second it came out of my mouth, I know my brain is so fried. I was up till 2 a.m. last night. So
fucking don't hate the Beatles and Jesse McCartney.
Bongo star.
So those are mine. Star Wars, Circle of Life, Back to the Future / Power of Love, Austin Powers theme, Live and Let Die, Ken Jack, round it out.
Oh, woo, woo, it's the bad opinions, man.
Oh, man. No, let's not do this.
So I picked a lot of really obvious ones, just because I knew you guys wouldn't, because you try and be hipsters and pick out obscure stuff, but I went with the classics. So my number one is Indiana Jones. So easily one of the most iconic soundtracks of all time, arguably maybe on par with as far as John Williams' work with Star Wars. I think it's so like immediately picked up and like you get like that feeling of nostalgia from watching all three. And I'm not going to count anything after that, but all three, even Temple of Doom, and just I don't know, that it's sort of feeling of like childhood wonderment for me at least. I love that soundtrack.
You could honestly pick five John Williams songs and nobody could really debate you on that.
So when I went with my list, I went with like favorite. But when I think about the best themes and the best like scores of all time, John Williams is the king.
For number two, I got Braveheart. So I think for me, it's another type of childhood thing where it brings back an element of nostalgia. But I just fucking love bagpipes. I get into it so much. And I think a lot of other people do as well. So I think it's so recognizable again off the bat, their main theme. And it gives you like that feeling of being fired up.
I don't disagree with it. but I don't know the Braveheart theme off the top of my head.
It played it before it started, dude.
Oh, yeah.
The bagpipe, that's another iconic point.
That was the only clip I didn't hear.
You just didn't see the beginning? That's a good pick. You're on a roll. Keep it going.
I like it. I like Ken Jack. I like to encourage his opinions because I think he's evolving.
You're like putting my shit on the fridge.
A plus, Ken Jack.
So my next one is the theme from Pirates of the Caribbean. When you start hearing that hum in that song, you immediately get that feeling of like, oh fuck, it's pirates. And like, it's another, I think my main motif in every one of my movies is it getting you like fired up and ready to go. I might even listen to this in the gym or going for a run or something.
Another great like sports highlight tape song. When this movie came out for like the next couple of years, this was always attached to like a college football highlight reel or NFL. It just fit perfectly.
My next one, this is number four, is the main theme from Lord of the Rings. So this is, again, running right back into my theme of everything getting you fired up. The main theme from Lord of the Rings just brings me back to, like, waiting for these movies to come out. I went to the midnight releases for The Two Towers and Return of the King. I didn't go with the Hobbit ones. Sorry, folks. I laid that for letting me in down.
Stunk
out loud. Didn't miss much. But those that main theme for Lord of the Rings is so masterful, and they retool it in each movie really well, and it's so good, so good.
That and the Hobbit one, is it Concerning a Hobbit?
Yeah, Concerning Hobbits.
Again, in that movie, I sound like I'm plugging this movie that I just watched. But Score, that documentary, they talk about how they use those two same songs the whole time throughout all three movies, and like you said, retool it in a way. It sets such a familiar feeling and tone, even though what's happening might be different in terms of something bad or good happening.
My last one, which may be my like favorite one, I think I have this playlist saved on my Spotify, is the entire track for Tarzan, the 1999 animated version. Come stop crying, we'll be
alright. Just take my hand. Phil Collins song? I'm on board.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, this is a great, and it actually, I'm pretty sure it won an award as well.
The Academy Award for Best Song.
Best Original,
In a movie or something like that. The South Park guys were mad about it. They created a whole episode trashing my boy, Phil.
It was a fucking awesome track.
Wait, You'll Be in My Heart?
You'll be in my heart.
Yeah.
I like Strangers Like Me in Two Worlds, I think, better than that song, but
You're kind of picking, like, as a whole.
I want to pick the whole theme. I think if I had to pick one song, it would probably be Two Worlds with like Strangers Like Me, like 1A, 1B.
Okay, so we got to get into now our least favorite. So the worst movie song that you can think of. I have a prediction here based on what I have. I think there's going to be a common, at least two of them, and all three might be similar. Trill, you started off.
So I'm going to stick with the James Bond songs. I mentioned earlier there are a lot of good James Bond songs and there are a lot of bad ones. And the contrast with Adele's Skyfall and Sam Smith's Writing on the Wall, which is just an awful song in a bad movie, which is Spectre. I've been here before. This is what I came up with for worst movie songs. I don't have a lot of worst movie songs because I think by the time a movie gets made, they have a pretty good idea of what fits what. So it seems like a thin list to pick from, but this is what popped to mind because the song is just it's the meh emoji.
So Writing's on the Wall beat out. I remember at the Academy Awards, Lady Gaga had this massively like emotional performance with like abuse victims. It was like Till It Happens to You. Joe Biden introed it, and then they picked the winner and it was Writing on the Wall by Sam Smith. It was like one of the, that whole Oscars was a huge buzzkill because that's the one that Sylvester Stallone didn't win.
Oh.
And then that song won. And then he said something that was like a false fact on stage. Was that
when Travolta came out and mispronounced Idina Menzel's name?
No, I think that was the year before.
Oh, damn it.
Bridge of Spies won over Stallone, right?
Yeah, Mark Rylance. That was Leo's first Oscar, that Oscars. My pick? I almost went with the James Bond one. I thought about picking Die Another Day by Madonna, which is horrible.
Horrible opening, too.
Yeah. Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas won an Oscar over You've Got a Friend in Me, which is a crime. But the one I picked, Back in Time, the theme to Men in Black 3 by Pitbull. From Cape Canaveral, MK, Big Sack, that's rad. Back in time. No hate to Pitbull. Great dude, works hard, Mr. Worldwide. No, a no-go for me on that one, because I love Men in Black 1 and 2. And 3 was, especially when Men in Black by Will Smith was such a great track.
Dolly!
This is the one that leads this movie. Just wasn't feeling it.
Was that the one with the Frankie Valli sample?
Yes, it was.
So the Men in Black 1 had an awesome song in Men in Black, and then Men in Black 2 had Nod Your Head. I think it's like Black Suits Coming, Nod Your Head. And that was bad. And then this one just hit rock bottom. No, I'm with you on that one. I don't think it's as bad as Writings on the Wall, because that one is just...
I love Pitbull too. This is an attack on a great man.
Uh-oh. I didn't say it was a bad man.
No, a great man. This is not a great song.
He sent his personal jet to Puerto Rico today to help bring cancer patients back to the States.
Look at Kendrick trying to make it.
Yeah, you're attacking Mr. Worldwide. Really, man?
Was he the entertainer who there was a contest on like which Walmart store to send him to?
Yeah, he went to Alaska.
And he went to Alaska. So, yeah, great dude.
So I'm a big hater of Mission Impossible movies. I didn't really like any of them. So Limp Bizkit did the Mission Impossible for Mission Impossible 2, and it is so bad. So bad. And Limp Bizkit in general, also pretty bad. I'm probably going to get some flack for that, but it was so trash with like the weird like undertone power theme and everything.
Now I know why you want to hate me, because hate is all the world sees likely.
It's so bad. That's easily, I think, my number one. It's like you were saying, Trill. There's not many movies where I'm like immediately like think, oh, I hate that song. Oh, I hate that theme. But this one is pretty easy. But it also ties into me disliking the franchise in general.
Some other ones that we didn't mention, and then we're gonna read off some tweets that we got. Goldfinger, the theme to E.T., and the theme to Jurassic Park. Cutting those off my list was tough. Those are great.
Good ones. We're on good ones.
Yeah, in general now. Yeah.
Yeah.
We forgot in general. Space Jam, the Harry Potter theme, John Williams, the theme to Halloween, You've Got a Friend in Me, should have been an Oscar winner. I wrote the Mission Impossible theme down just after Ken Jack said that. Just the regular theme. Batman, the Danny Elfman theme, which was the end song to our real dump this week. The Dark Knight theme as well, Hans Zimmer. Also Hans Zimmer, the Inception theme song. Duel of Fates from Star Wars, because that kind of became the theme to the prequels. And I guess you could say the Imperial March as well. The Beetlejuice theme song, Danny Elfman. Danger Zone and Footloose. Hero by Nickelback. Spider-Man. Spider-Man 2.
So this song doesn't get enough love. It's from the original Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, I think. And it wasn't by Nickelback. It was by Chad Kroeger from Nickelback and the guy from Fuel. Hero. I actually think this was a good song. It's very 2001, 2002, but that's my era, so nostalgia.
The Star Trek theme song. Was surprised Ken Jack didn't pick it.
Yeah.
I love the way they redid it for the reboots too. The Muppets theme song / Rainbow Connection. Gonna Fly Now, the Rocky theme. That's again another as iconic as it gets. My Heart Will Go On, which if you look up best and worst movie songs, that one is sometimes on the best list and sometimes on the worst. Obviously, Celine Dion from Titanic. And then finally, I've Had the Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing. So a lot of them. And let me just quickly read off some that people sent us on Twitter. Had a lot of Jurassic Parks. Someone said Ninja Rap by Vanilla Ice from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 2. Love that. Somebody suggested Hero by Nickelback, and then somebody, I think the Mask parody, Trebon, said Hero Bangs. So it looks like somebody made that comment earlier. Oh, Back to the Future. Huey Lewis in the News. We have Ninja Rap again, so that's the leader as I scroll through this. A lot of Star Wars. Theme from Ghostbusters, didn't even mention that one. Danger Zone, Beetlejuice. The Goonies song, Goonies Are Good Enough, which was actually on a lot of worst lists. Glad somebody put that. Indiana Jones, Star Wars. The list kind of, it goes on. Last Mohicans is on there. So a lot of the ones that we already mentioned.
The theme from Ghostbusters is actually interesting because I think Huey Lewis in the News, they wanted them to do that song to begin with. And for whatever reason, they didn't do it. So that's why the song is just a gigantic ripoff of their style.
somebody said, I think it was Joe Favia, I think to pronounce his name. He said Street to Philadelphia, and Cho, you replied and said one of those is on my list. So congrats on that, picking that one. Cause that might be the most, I don't want to say obscure because it's a well-known like good movie song, but that's one of the more obscure picks that somebody had that was actually on our list. So shout out to everyone who tweeted us and gave us some thoughts on their favorite movie tracks.
I think the only song artist I wanted to have on my list, but I couldn't find a movie that they put this song in, was Hoobastank. The reason couldn't find it in a single movie. Such an emotional track.
What about Down with the Sickness?
Ooh, that has to be in a movie.
Ooh, yeah, it's probably in XXX.
The Ice Cube one.
I was thinking Cradle to the Grave with DMX. X gonna give it to you. That's another one. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm actually surprised nobody said Moana because people love Moana or Frozen. Let it go.
I do love that soundtrack.
So we tweeted at the beginning of the show, live while we were recording, asking who people would cast as John McClane, the young John McClane in the next Die Hard. We're going to read them off. We haven't read them yet. I think there's some funny ones based on the first initial replies we saw. Michael Cera, Chris Pratt, Scott Eastwood, Liev Schreiber as the young John McClane. Somebody said Haley Joel Osment. At What's a Greenhorn said Haley Joel Osment. So he had some telekinesis powers there and knew that you would say that, Trill. Jesse Eisenberg. At Marshall Sheldon said Kevin James.
That would be a good
die fart.
That would be a great Sandler verse.
Yeah.
Die Hard.
Horatio Corn 2 said Idris Elba. Someone did say Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Christopher Mintz-Plasse from Superbad, McLovin. At Andy Ed said Tracy Morgan.
We that got would be funny.
Steven Seagal, Riz Ahmed, Jack Black.
That would be weird.
What about The Rock?
I think someone said The Rock.
I'm sure it's in here. Andy Samberg, Hayden Christensen, at Tommy B 730 is the first one to throw out Ansel Elgort. And the next tweet was also Ansel Elgort or Miles Teller from at @Don_balls.
I'll find you.
We have a lot of premium power users here.
We do. At Dash Treyhorn says, just rewatch the first Die Hard. I like that. Somebody said The Mask, Chadwick Boseman, a.k.a. Black Panther. Brian Urlacher, so he's bald in the prequel, and then he has hair in the next one.
Brian Cranston.
Yeah. Nicholas Holt.
Okay, I like that one, actually.
That is a good one. At Jake FP5 says Young Sheldon.
That would get the views up.
Oh, I like this one. At B_Howell says Steve Buscemi, but the new Die Hard takes place in the Happy Madison universe. Bunch for Lucas Hedges from Manchester by the Sea. Benedict Cumberbatch. Pretty sure Clint Eastwood's available. Another Miles Teller, Tobey Maguire, another young Sheldon.
Can you imagine they shoot someone and goes like, bazinga.
Jon Snow, Benicio Del Toro, Jeremy Piven. He's got the Lloyd! Somebody said John Cena. Another Ansel Elgort, Chris Pine, Jake Paul, Channing Tatum, The Rock. There you go. Our good friend of the pod, at Fansince09, actually suggested Will Arnett. Said he doesn't know if it would work as young, but he think he'd be a great John McClane. The eyebrow kid from We're the Millers, which was, what's his name? Will Poulter, I think is what it was. Donald Glover, Forrest Whitaker, Taylor Kitsch. This is one that I actually read mid-podcast, and I laughed out loud. Ted Gilkey, old neighbor of mine back in Texas. I retweeted this tweet on my timeline, and on his timeline, the next tweet after the John McClane tweet was the John McClane Texans beat writer, the guy that
the
big white guy with the mustache.
Getting too old for this shit.
Friend of the pod, PFT commenter, said a young Jason Statham. Smockin' Josh Gad. I like that one. That's a good one. Will Smith. Let's see, the E-Trade baby, Danny DeVito, Jesse Eisenberg, and then Ansel Elgort once again, which actually it was spelled, it was at Ty M. Peter spelled it Ansel Engenort. So I'm like,
good fuck stuff. It.
So I don't know if that was funny to the listeners, but I'm laughing pretty hard over here. So the replies were huge on that one. So we'll try to do something like that every show where we get you guys to reply, because that was a hell of a laugh. Even if no one listens to this podcast, I got a great laugh, and that's all that matters.
I hope it's just like a poorly done CGI approximation of what young Bruce Willis looks like.
Oh, like they did with like Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, but like not well done. It looks like something from like the 2000s Final Fantasy movie,
or like The Mummy, like The Rock, The Mummy.
Yes, some exactly like that.
Listeners, thanks again for listening and for the big news of the week that you heard at the top of the pod, that we have been acquired. Lights, Camera, Movie brand has been acquired by Trill Ballins International LLC. Huge, huge move for us.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. Unfortunately, the conditions of the acquisition I cannot speak about, but I think it'll be a good move for both brands.
Tweet us your thoughts on it, your favorite movie, songs, anything else. We're going to do some more call outs. We also want you to tweet us what it would turn into. We'll tweet a graphic out tomorrow and you guys can reply and we'll pick our favorite ones. So remember to follow us on Twitter at Lights Camera Pod. Hit up the website, lightscameramovies.com. That's kind of like our overarching brand. You'll find all of our reviews on there. See Kingsman if you haven't already, because we're reviewing it next week. That'll allow you to listen to the whole podcast all the way through without spoilers. Thank you again for listening. Hit the like button, hit subscribe, hit retweet, hit whatever, follow us. We appreciate you guys listening and joining in. We're going to continue to get you guys more and more involved. Reminder, we also work like day jobs, so we're trying our best here to get you guys more involved and perfect this podcast process. But the feedback has been great, so keep letting us know what more we can do and how we can get everyone involved. Any last thoughts, guys?
I'm ready to tear Kingsman 2 apart.
I'm ready to tear not Kingsman 2 apart.
It's not going to be as friendly as the It review was.
Yeah, because I had no expectations going into It other than to be scared, which I wasn't. I had a lot of expectations coming into Kingsman 2.
Well, your Kingsman 2 review is already up on our website, and you didn't rip into it too much. You kind of like gave it a little teaser, and you rated that a full 8 points less than It, so I can't even imagine what you're going to say next week.
Ken Jack's like, I fucking hate this movie, 68.
Oh, boy.
Worst movie of all time, 70.
Well, for Trill Ballins.
It me.
I was waiting for it. LCP Ken Jack.
Yep.
I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Sunday night. How can that